CW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Whether it lasts remains to be seen, but a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon-based Hezbollah is now in effect.
The Israeli cabinet approving the Hezbollah plan, brokered by the U.S. and France, for a 60-day pause during which Hezbollah would move north from the border with Israel and Israeli forces gradually withdrawing from southern Lebanon.
ABC's Martha Raddatz, wanted in the U.S. for bombings in the San Francisco area in 2003, suspected animal rights extremist Daniel Andreas San Diego is in custody in Great Britain. No one was hurt in the bombings on the campus of a biotechnology company 21 years ago. In Manchester, New Hampshire, a jury convicted 70-year-old Bradley Asbury, one-time leader at a youth detention center, convicted him of holding down a teenager at the Sununu Youth Services Center while that teen was being raped in 1998.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
Wisconsin goes up in the rankings. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, the Badgers, have two home games coming up this Saturday at noon against Chicago State. And then next week, Tuesday night, they take on Michigan. The Badgers now rank 15th in the nation after winning the Greenbrier Tournament in Orlando over the weekend. The Marquette Golden Eagles learn that they're now number 10th ranked in the nation. They'll host Stonehill tomorrow night in Milwaukee, the tip-off time, 8 o'clock. NBA, the Bucks in Miami tonight against the Heat. The Bucks have won four in a row. NFL, Packers holding practice for their game on Thanksgiving this Thursday night against the Miami Dolphins. Kickoff at 7:20, TV coverage on NBC. And then Friday at 11 a.m., more football. It's the Badgers against the Minnesota Gophers at Camp Randall Stadium.
Rivalry games, you throw records out the window. You throw sometimes even the home field advantage out the window. It comes down to who wants it more. And anybody that can't get up for that doesn't belong in either one of these places.
That's Badgers head football coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. From Denmark to De Pere, this is 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about the Trump transition going smoothly right down the tracks as they are bringing people from all weird different corners of conservatism. Should be an interesting 4 years. Should be fun. Should be entertaining. Kind of just like the last four. Lots of corruption. I'm not sure if there's going to be the same level of chaos. I know that Democrats are not going to come out swinging right away. But at some point, they're kind of going to have to once they figure out what it is that they're going to push for. And as I've been saying, you know, the reality, the solutions may just come out of the suffering and the savagery that we're going to see. And we are going to see the Project 2025 and every iteration after that being moved forward in one way or another, either out in front or silently through the back door. So, get ready. Next year should be a doozy. And look, for me personally, next year is going to be a very difficult time. And I wanted to start today off by thanking everyone before the holiday. Because, you know, everyone is thankful for someone, and I'm thankful for all of my viewers and listeners across the country and all of the people who have just been fantastic in this, what has been my darkest hour. This has been the roughest period in my entire life, and I've had some rough stuff happen over the years. This has been the most difficult to get through, and it's because of folks out in the audience who have been so gracious with their love and their thoughts and their prayers and their vibes and their juju or whatever. Just the positive energy has been incredible. As you know, my wife was involved in a motorcycle accident back on September the 12th, and we have, as a family, been dealing with what is a very traumatic situation. She has a traumatic brain injury. We don't know what's going to come back. She's healing. She's had multiple surgeries and, you know, basically broke every bone on the right side of her body. Some compound fractures that, you know, take more time to heal. But physically, you know, starting to move in a better direction. Still unable to stand and unable to do anything, put any weight on her legs. And, you know, there's a long road to come. And what I've been saying to people is, she's going to live. We just don't know what that life looks like. And, you know, we're going to, for the next year at least, because the doctors tell us they can't give us a prognosis of how she's going to progress until a year has passed, which I'm struggling to figure out that. But this whole process has been, you know, to me, you know, really a very life-changing kind of event. Not just because personally my life is different, because you know my children's mother is not there to care for them, and I'm doing a whole bunch of other things, but because of the people who have reached out. And as I've said before, it gives me hope that there is a way forward. It gives me hope that as a country we can be a better community. That what color hat you wore or who you voted in for in the last election, maybe I hope doesn't matter as much, that it's the kind of place we want. And that when we start talking about policy, and look, I'm hoping the next 4 years is really talking about, you know, about policy. What policies can we move that are going to make people's lives better? In this election, what the narrative we're told is that people didn't vote for Kamala Harris because they didn't believe that she could make their lives better. They were upset about the inflation. They were upset about the economy. And that either they trusted Donald Trump more or they just dropped out. So Donald Trump really, you know, honestly has a chance. The Republicans now have a chance to be the party of the working class. What policies will they move? It's like I said right after my wife had the accident. It didn't matter who she was going to vote for. It didn't matter who she had voted for in the past or who she loves or if she supports abortion or gay rights or any of that. It didn't matter. People rushed to her aid the second it happened. An ambulance showed up immediately within a couple of minutes. The police were there. The helicopter showed up. All of the machinery, all of the infrastructure, all of the policies that were set in place worked. She's alive today because the community came together and saved her life. And for me, that's not just a metaphor of what could be a larger kind of community. It's who we are. And it's who we can be as a population. And I come back, it's who I want us to be. I want the best outcomes for working people. I want people to have opportunities for themselves, for their families, for their children. I want people to live their lives with health security, with retirement security. That's policy-based. That's stuff that has to be hammered out. And it's my fear that we're going to go in the wrong direction, and I've made that argument. That's my fear that the policies that will be moved will not be in the best interest of working people. And I was talking to a friend today who just got on Medicare, and he said, you know, I opted for the traditional Medicare, and he's like, I'm not sure how much longer it's going to be around, because he's already recognizing the push to completely privatize Medicare. And in the next 4 years, I fully believe that Medicare will be entirely privatized, which means that seniors will no longer have that guarantee of health care. that now they're going to have deductibles and co-pays and co-insurance and all of the things that those of us who have commercial insurance, those things that we have and are very fortunate to have, that we've now saddled our seniors with. And the question becomes, and this is where the next 4 years for me is going to be pointing out, these are the policies. Are these good for working people? Are these bad for working people? For me, it's never been, and I've said this before, it's never been about red hat, blue hat. It's never been about Republicans or Democrats. It's about who stands up and fights for working people. I've always believed that. My problem is there aren't many Republicans out there. This is an opportunity for the GOP to really support the people who've supported them. The question is will they? And look, I'm looking at a large number of the picks from the CEO class, from the vulture capitalist class, and I'm going, I don't think so. And then they're on the other side, you know, the woman that they've nominated to be the head of the Department of Labor gives me hope that maybe they won't attack labor. But then reality comes back to my head and you go, no, this is who they are. So we will see. It's going to be an interesting year, especially for me in my life. But it's going to be an interesting year for the country. You know, what gets passed through, what gets pushed, what gets left on the cutting room floor. And what can we do to make sure that it isn't as ugly as we fear? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think the next year is going to look like? Share some thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, is going to be here to share some thoughts on, well, Linda McMahon as the head of the Department of Education. That should be fun. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of fun and entertainment around the transition, and as the pundits are saying, the fastest rollout of transition team, at least in our lifetime, and a little bit in there for everybody. A little comedy, little tragedy. The CEO class thrilled. Wall Street Journal thrilled with Trump's pick for Treasury. A hedge fund executive and surprise, surprise, a guy named Scott Bessent. So they're thrilled. They're going to get theirs. The one that caught my attention over at the Department of Education, the WWE, Linda McMahon, the former CEO over there, his pick to be the next Secretary of Education, got my kids thrilled. The idea of turning the classroom into a circus, hitting each other with chairs, that kind of stuff. Seems very interesting, and that's why I've been looking forward to talking to my next guest about what her thoughts are on McMahon at the Department of Education. So I've asked Randy Weingarten to share some thoughts. She's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, AFT.org, their website. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
So, Rick, it's, Donald Trump won the election. So we have to deal with the fact that he's going to put and usher in a whole new group of people. And we're going to see pretty soon whether it is about the working class and the price of eggs which is why I think people voted to, you know, for him instead of for Harris, even though it was a close election. And, you know, what he's going to do to shake up the economy to make sure that working people get a fair shake. Looks like it's the billionaire class, not the working class, you know, up until now in terms of who's been picked. And what's interesting is that the only person that's been picked that seems to be representative of workers, the labor secretary, you know, the business class and the anti-union folk are doing double and triple time to try to undermine her candidacy. So, and, you know, when you get to the education secretary, a lot of people have been making a lot of jokes about, you know, wrestling and things like that. But we've taken a step, basically taken a pause and said, let's try and figure out if she is actually going to do things to help young people. I mean, the bottom line is you got to actually help young people. And that means strengthening public education, not undermining it. And so we see like the tweet she did right before she was picked was about career tech ed and, you know, pathway programs in Switzerland. And as you know, from all the times I've been on your show, I've been talking about this over and over again, that we can't just be about college prep in high schools.
Right.
We really have to be. 60% of our high school students don't go to college after high schools. We have to move workforce preparation to high school, stackable credentials, and do earn and learn programs like the apprenticeships that Joe Biden started in different places, like what the trades do. But we have to bring them into to high schools. And she seems to be pretty big on that. So will we have our fights? Yes, of course we'll have our fights. But the first, if you really believe in children, and if this president says, president-elect says he's going to be the president for all the people, and he really says he wants to be about working class folk, then I'm going to test that. And I'm going to see if they mean it or they don't mean it.
Because I was going to ask you to compare and contrast a bit between Trump's first presidency and what we're seeing coming out, because it seems like the reaction from folks like you and from a lot of the people on the left are kind of, you know, hold our powder a little bit, wait till there's something to get worked up about. But I look at her and I know she's done a lot of work with Special Olympics. There's a lot that you could go, okay, we're going to give her a chance. But ultimately, aren't we concerned that a lot of what the Betsy DeVos's of the world are still in Project 2025, still
yes.
in the goals of the Republican Party? And ultimately,
yes.
We end up getting, even if the window dressing is nice, we still end up getting the bad stuff that happens.
Yes. And we will fight as hard as we can the defunding of public education. You know, we don't want the defunding of the police. We don't want the defunding of public education. You don't want the defunding of safety, and you don't want the defunding of opportunity. So, and just like voters all, you know, during the midterms voted against vouchers in the three times that was put to them, including in Nebraska, where they voted overwhelmingly for Trump, they also voted overwhelmingly to defeat vouchers.
Right.
So that's why the test here is, are you about the people and the working class and the middle class, which is who we're about trying to create opportunity, or is this just window dressing? And that's why I'm very concerned about the allegations, you know, since her nomination was made public about, you know, these, you know, that she hid allegations of sexual assault. And I'm very concerned about that. But all of this will, you know, come out in her hearing.
And so
when I say reserve judgment, where, you know, we tried to work with Betsy DeVos after she was, you know, confirmed. We went, took her to, you know, a school, but she never followed up. And, but this, you know, Linda McMahon, I don't know her, you know, she seems to be wanting to deal with literacy. She seems to want to deal with career tech ed. And like, you can't eliminate all federal policy about education, because frankly, we need federal policy about education to actually make these career pathways work. Schools have been able to do this all the time under Perkins.
Right.
They haven't. Some have. They haven't. We need to actually make sure that we are helping every disengaged young person. And that's what public education is about.
But still, you still have the Republican hatred of the Department of Education. In fact, South Dakota Senator Mike Rounds introduced a piece of legislation that is basically a roadmap to eliminate the Department of Education,
right,
and thus get rid of Linda McMahon, no matter what her ideas are.
And look, Senator Rounds' bill, I mean, I kind of chuckled when I saw it, because it is exactly what I was concerned about. They get rid of all of Title I. All the money for poor kids, which frankly disproportionately go to red states, they get rid of it. Like, how do you create opportunity for kids when you get rid of all the money? And it's hard to know. Are they getting rid of all the testing? I mean, we keep talking about more teaching, less testing. Looks like they got rid of all the testing too. And it looks like they put all this other stuff, you know, and when I say I chuckled about it, because one of my predecessors, Al Shanker, and our union at the time said, keep it in HEW, keep health, education, and welfare together for the whole child. And what does Rounds do? Half the stuff, it goes back to HHS. So, I mean, the issue here is function.
Right.
The issue here is, what are we going to do to help kids? And so, just like you can see, a lot of my progressive colleagues as well, what we're concerned about, what I'm concerned about, is it looks like the billionaires have stepped in and have basically said, we're going to have another Gilded Age. And that's going to hurt the working class and the middle class even more than they've been hurt. And so Biden tried to change this, and it looks like Trump is snapping it right back. And so, you know, it's not a wait and see attitude. We're getting ready. But it's a matter of, the goal here is, how do we help working people? That's the goal.
Right.
The goal is not ideology. The goal is, how do you use democracy and how do you use policy to help working people? That means solidifying, strengthening education, and it means strengthening, not eliminating, labor unions.
No, ultimately, I've been saying this is time for Trump to put up or shut up.
Yeah.
If you're really going to be the champion of the working class. But I fear, again, that the policies, because I've read Project 2025, I fear those policies are going to create a horrible environment. And as I've been saying, look, maybe we have to go through this. Maybe the solutions are going to be in the suffering. Maybe the solutions will be in their savagery. I don't know, because it's the only time we seem to come together is when there's chaos or crisis. And maybe this is it.
And Rick, I'm not sugarcoating this at all. And, you know, maybe you can call it, you know, we're putting him to the test.
Right.
Is he, you know, but it's not like we haven't read Project 2025. It's not like he hasn't just put Russell Voigt back in there. It's not like he didn't lie about that. He lies about everything. But actions speak louder than words. And at this point, you know, they're going to go through a congressional hearing. People like Matt Gaetz was completely unqualified, and they pulled him out. There are others who are completely unqualified. Let's see what they do with them. Let's see what the Senate does with advising consent. But when you get to the twin engines of opportunity, education and labor, that people in America want strengthened, not undermined, that is what we're going to focus on, and that is what we're going to fight for. And then we're also going to fight to protect our kids and protect kids who are in our schools. And we're going to protect families, and we're going to protect kids, and we're going to try and help and support our members in any way possible. So we're preparing lots of different stuff. But I think that I'm just seeing if he actually means what he says when it means things like education and labor.
No, absolutely. On the labor front, the woman that he chose, who was on the House Education and Workforce Committee, this Lori Chavez de Remer, who, as I said the other day, look, I think Sean O'Brien was responsible for this. I give him credit. Her father was a Teamster. It seems she's, as I've said, the best pick we were going to get from the worst person making the pick. So yeah. Let me get your thoughts, because I got another thought that comes with this, but I want to get your gut reactions.
Look, my gut reaction was, you know, my head turned, and when she was on the Ed Committee, she voted against vouchers. She voted for the Public Service Negotiations Act. She voted for the PRO Act. And, you know, I give Sean a lot of credit for, it was clear that he had made some kind of deal. So I give him a lot of credit for getting that done. But, you know, it's not done until there's a confirmation. And notice what these anti-union ideologues are doing. They won't even, so what are they saying? That what Trump was saying about the working class was a fraud? Because they don't want him helping the working class. They keep on, you know, they're going apoplectic about this pick.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I look at someone like Virginia Fox, who released a statement saying that, you know, a very glowing statement about Lori Chavez de Remer, you know, looking forward to a Department of Labor embracing free enterprise policies, you know, getting away from the heavy hand of the federal government, saying instead of punitive, overzealous, job-killing regulations, it's time to unleash America's ingenuity and entrepreneurial spirit. It seemed to be a kind of a glowing response to Lori Chavez de Remer. And I got to tell you, anytime Virginia Fox says something positive about somebody, I look twice because I check my pockets.
Look, Rick, I'm going to say it again. We lost the election.
Correct.
Not by much. And I think the reasons that we lost the election were that working class folk said the prices are too high and our wages are not high enough. And Donald Trump said, I'm going to help the working people. Now, labor unions are who helps the working people. Education, public education is who helps the working people. So when I say we're going to put them to the test, you know, given the, I mean, you know me, it's not like I shy away from a fight, but we have to actually help working people.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
And that is the first. So, and if they don't, we're going to say you didn't. We're going to show the contrast. We're going to, but if you, you know, we're trying to say, let's go in there with an open mind, listen to all the results of the election, all the results of the election. That people want a labor movement. They want public education. They don't want vouchers. Listen to all the results of the election. Don't just pick and choose what you want to hear. People didn't vote against their democracy. They didn't believe that Donald Trump would do this other stuff, but they voted for their pocketbooks and the middle class and the working class. It's about time that they come first, not the billionaires, but the middle class and the working class and their opportunity. So that's what I'm focused on.
And that's one of the reasons we love you. look, I love a fighter. I love somebody who's going to say it like it is. And look, I'm hoping this Lori Chavez de Remer gets confirmed. Because look, at the end of the day, the person who's in charge of that body is really important on how things are implemented. And what's surprising to me is the number of people I've talked to releasing that, and this is where I kind of want to end this, is the number of union members that I've talked to recently who don't realize just how important someone who is pro-labor being at the Department of Labor is, and all of the things that position can do. And either pushing really bad policies, such as repealing the joint employer rule, doing some really, you know, decent things. Yeah.
It's really intense. That's a really important job. You know, a lot of government, it can either help you or it can frustrate you or it can hurt you. That job could really help you. Same in terms of the education secretary. But people have to trust that government can help them. And forever, since Reagan, there has been an undermining of that. Ultimately, we have to get back to a situation where working people feel like there is hope in the future, not in the past. And if he doesn't do what he says he was going to do in terms of drop the price of eggs, if he doesn't do what he says he's going to do in terms of inflation, lots of economists say he can't and he won't. But if you don't, you know, the guy is going to be, you know, in that look already. at who the Democrats are versus who the Republicans are.
Yep. No, I'm looking forward. Look, I'm looking forward to the dollar a gallon gas.
Democrats didn't say the election results were unfair. Democrats didn't whine about that. Democrats invited him to the White House to say, we're going to have a real transition. There was a respect for the Constitution and the rule of law. That's also an important lesson about what is happening right now. Let's respect our democracy and then fight it out in terms of policy. And if he's saying right now that he wants career tech ed and he wants to have these kind of policies and we want to help kids, particularly all these disaffected young kids who don't feel hope, that's what we're trying to do.
There you go. But I got to tell you, I am looking forward to the dollar gallon of gas and the 99 cent eggs. I'm looking forward to it. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
This is the talk of Green Bay, WGBW. This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy sky tonight and a low near 20, and mostly cloudy and cold tomorrow, high mid-30s. Partly sunny, a high in the low 30s for Thanksgiving, even colder for Friday, high only in the mid-20s and partly cloudy. It's 24 right now.
The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, the tariffs are coming. The tariffs are coming. Evidently, Donald Trump has pledged day one. Day one, there will be massive hikes in tariffs on goods coming from Canada, Mexico, and yes, China. And I'm going, can we put tariffs on Mexico and Canada? Don't we have, didn't he redo something? Just kind of a thought. Here to share some thoughts on, what we can expect, what this means, and is the sky falling? Will this mean that everything's going to go up 25 or 30%? So I've asked Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it is great to be with you, as always.
So the tariffs are coming day one. Canada, Mexico, China. I get the China one. I kind of do. But can mm-hmm. Let's start with Canada and Mexico. Can they put tariffs on Canada and Mexico?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you set it up perfectly. We do have a free trade agreement with Canada and Mexico. It's now called the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, formerly NAFTA. And there are essentially zero percent tariffs in place on qualifying goods that are going back and forth between those three countries. Now, we also do have tariffs in place on some Mexican and Canadian products right now because of unfair trade practices. So think of Canadian softwood lumber, some types of Mexican steel, and what have you. So there is some of that too. But the big windup here is that, yes, there are mechanisms in our trade law where you can impose additional tariffs on Canadian products, Mexican products. I don't want to go through the alphabet soup of trade policy to get you there, but it is possible to do that. Doesn't mean it would be elegant. Doesn't mean it would be without retaliation. But here's something that I am fairly certain about. I don't think when he says day one, he can start the paper flowing on day one. If his first term was any guide, it's going to take months or maybe even more than a year to get to the ultimate destination. That's kind of what happened with steel and aluminum and even the China tariffs too.
But Scott, day one, that's dictator day. you know, anything could be done on day one because he's a dictator. That's day one. Yeah. He's only going to be a dictator for one day, he said, or at least I'm told he said. So this is dictator day. He should be able to get to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, well, you know, there is the law that you have to deal with. And, you know, I remember the last kind of like round of executive orders he did on day one. And some of them were completely toothless and meaningless, right? I mean, that's, you know, and ultimately turned out to be nothing. So, you know, I will just say this, you know, you now have 8 different versions of what his tariff policy will be, right? You know, you got 60% tariffs on China that he said during the campaign. You have 10 or 20% tariffs on across the board on all goods. You have, you know, tariffs against Mexico and against Canada. And it's worth noting that at least this latest announcement, he tied it to immigration and to fentanyl mostly, and not to like the trade flows necessarily. I mean, that was my reading of it, certainly. So there's, you know, there's a lot to unpack and to unwrap here. And I don't think that we will know what this process is going to look like until, you know, well after day one, once they get all of this started.
Now, if you remember the Harris campaign, you know, ran on, and a number of groups ran on that this was going to be Trump's, you know, China tax. This was going to increase the cost of goods. There doesn't seem to be, from what I'm reading so far, the kind of strategy that I think both you and I would prefer. This seems to be, you know, you got a hammer, so everything looks like a nail. If he does do what he says, if he follows through on this, does this make inflation better or worse?
Yeah. Yeah. See, it's a good question. And look, I'm not saying a lot about it either because I don't view a Truth Social post as a policy paper. I mean,
but in Trump landia, that's the closest you're getting, man.
All right. Well, that's true, but it's not going to give you the detail you need to know how this is going to work. And if there's going to be exemptions and exclusions or conversations about, you know, immigration and fentanyl and all of this other stuff that's wrapped up into it. So I, you know, my philosophy, you know, now and in the future is to take a breath, to look at things, but not to get too, you know, too worked up about it until kind of the policy lays out. And I kind of describe, look, I can see a rationale for doing this, but to do it deliberately and to engage, because we do have a super high trade deficit with Mexico, and there is a fentanyl problem with respect to Mexico. And, you know, there are migration issues to have a conversation about. So this is the way that he's starting the conversation. It's more of a left jab or something like that than hand holding.
Yeah.
But that's his style. And you referenced the folks who had opposed the across the board tariff, saying that they're going to raise consumer prices. Clearly, no one paid attention to that. Right. I mean, that did not hurt Trump at all. And so I don't think it would now. And you can have every economist from, you know, around the world saying this is going to raise prices. And, you know, it may a little bit, but most people aren't going to notice it, or they're going to cast blame somewhere else. But, you know, we have a lot of experience now with the steel and aluminum tariffs and, you know, stabilize the industries. There are plenty of jobs in steel consuming industries that are available. The wages have generally gone up.
Right. But one could argue, Scott, that, you know, that was somewhat targeted, somewhat strategic, kind of a broad based across the board, because I'm sure you've seen Walmart, Lowe's, a number of these big retailers are already talking about raising prices in defense of this. I see it purely as good old fashioned American opportunism. But you know, they're jumping ahead of this, of saying, you know, if, you know, we're getting ready to raise prices because of these Trump tariffs.
Yeah. I think he'll find a way to talk to them about why it's not a great idea.
Or they're going to line his pockets. Cause I don't know if you saw the New York Times piece this week, about, you know, Trump's trade agenda could benefit his friends in that, you know, there are little niches and workarounds for certain, you know, preferred groups, which, you know, is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I look, again, it's going to be, I mean, here's what I think is going to happen. He's going to do some of these executive orders, and it's going to take a long time for that policy to get developed. Meanwhile, they're going to proceed through the first 100 days with budget reconciliation to do big tax cuts that look like they're going to be skewed towards corporations.
Oh, shocking.
They're going to have another kind of deregulatory agenda that's going to do that. And so are Walmart and Lowe's really going to follow through with a threat like that when he's, you know, he's like, on the one hand, you're saying you're going to do this. On the other hand, I'm going to cut your taxes. So what's it going to be, guys? So it's, I don't, you know, and again, the evidence from the last round of tariffs, and you're right, it was a little more targeted, but the evidence was that the companies absorbed almost all of that cost, that little if any was passed on to consumers. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
So basically what you're telling me is that corporations are going to say, pay me now or pay me later. Give me giant tax cuts or we're going to extract it the other way. But either way, we want to be fed first.
Yeah. Well, that's clear. And that's what unites, Rick, you know, the congressional Republicans and Trump. It's going to be doing the tax, just like it was again in 2017. I mean, we've seen this script before.
Right.
This is the, other than Supreme Court justices, this is the single thing that they have the most unanimity around, which is cutting taxes for big companies. So you know that's going to happen. And then whatever he does on trade, you know, they'll have their conversation, but there'll be a process. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a process that will say, well, you can exclude this product and that product and what have you. You know, so it's going to be... There's going to be a lot of opportunities for corporations and the administration to interact on issues.
That's a nice way of saying greasing palms. Or am I just jaded in this? Because, you know, look, I view Trump, you know, Mr. Art of the Deal, as someone who might be a little, you know, and the people around him, you know, a little in that world. I mean, Jared Kushner got $2 billion from the Saudis. It just maybe I'm just a little jaded from the first time around.
Yeah, you're not jaded. I mean, you saw it, right? So it's I guess, you know, history serves as a very useful guidepost here. And I think part of what he was doing with this announcement was to counter the blowback that he was hearing that his Treasury Secretary pick and his Commerce Secretary pick weren't the true believers in tariffs, right? That they were Wall Street guys. And this was a buzz. And I'm, you know, I don't pretend to even know what's on his mind, but I do have to believe that it's like, you know what? I'm going to get this out there and it's going to show I'm serious about all the trade stuff that I said I was serious about.
Since you put it this way, because, you know, I spoke earlier to Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teamsters, and said, look, you know, the Treasury guy, Wall Street is, wow, they're just giddy with the fact that they got their guy. They got a guy who was a hedge fund manager, a big executive with the, you know, the moneyed interests. They're thrilled. So how do these two then mesh? Because it seems ideologically across the transition, and I know you've seen a lot of this stuff over the years. This has been really quick, and there doesn't seem to be an ideology that ties them all together other than, well, greed. But right. It just doesn't seem to be any real consistency. And one could argue that could be a great thing, or it could be really chaotic with the firings and the revolving door that will be the Trump White House.
Yes, that's right. And look, I even hesitate to raise this, but, you know, there were these reports of, like, in the last administration of Peter Navarro, the trade hawk, and Gary Cohn, like, practically coming to blows over whether Trump could even see a policy or not on tariffs. And, you know, and there were these descriptions of, like, you know, the Wall Street guy and the, you know, the crazy Peter going at it. And ultimately, you know who won that, right? I mean, Gary Cohn left the administration. Trump did some of the tariffs. And so, you know, that's how that battle was fought and won. And so I just, you know, I don't know how it's going to play out, but there is always going to be this push and pull. It's going to be the Heritage Foundation Project 2025 crew. And there's a lot of personnel that they'll draw in from that, as well as the Wall Street types, like the, you know, Bessent and Lutnick, right? You know, who come from that crowd. It's going to be them versus kind of like the trade hawks. And there is no doubt that there will be that kind of friction. The question is just going to be who wins out. And look, let's be honest. You had that friction in the Democratic administration too, right? With Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. It's like, who's going to win out? Is it going to be Katherine Tai, or is it going to be another flavor over here? And so, and she ended up winning, you know, not all, but really many of those battles.
Now, look, I think, you know, having a diverse, you know, cabinet is probably not a bad thing. I think having those fights could be good in getting good policy, having people tell you, you know, things you don't want to hear. I just don't see Trump as that guy. I think he's somebody who likes chaos and likes, but ultimately day one is not going to be the only day he wants to be dictator. So it will be interesting to see if the White House is a revolving door. I do got to get your thoughts on his labor pick. You know, this Lori Chavez de Remer, who, you know, was on the House Education and Workforce Committee. She's somebody who, you know, we supported the PRO Act. As I said earlier, as far as I can tell, this is by far the best possible pick by probably the worst person making the pick. But, you know, labor should not be unhappy with her. So does this mean that maybe they're not on the chopping block, that maybe all that stuff in Project 2025 maybe isn't going to happen?
I wouldn't hold my breath, but, you know, there is the first hurdle, which is personnel is policy, right? And so that's as good as you're going to get. In fact, I would wager a bet, honestly, like if you were in a Democratic administration, you wanted to, you know, and you wanted to appoint a Republican to a cabinet post, that she would be like, all right, that's pretty reasonable to do her as the labor secretary, right? There's probably some better, but she'd be pretty reasonable for something like that. So, I mean, again, it's going to be her vision that she had as a member of Congress versus what Project 2025 and the big kind of Wall Street crowd wants to do. And there's going to be, I mean, they're going to be at it, Rick. They're going to be at it for sure.
So is this, in your view, a play by Trump to get, you know, Republican voters to stay with the Republican brand? Because, you know, this past election, there was a lot of talk that a lot of Teamsters, a lot of UAW members voted for Trump, and that, you know, the divide in the industrial unions is pretty equal. Is this an actual play, or is this window dressing of a play, do you think?
That's a great question. And, you know, everything that unfolds is going to answer it, right? And so I, you know, all I will say is that the dealings that I had with her and that we had with her office were all very positive, right? And but she was a member of Congress from Oregon then, in a very swing district. Yeah. Now she's going to be the labor secretary designate in a very high profile position with a lot of push and pull back and forth. So it's a different game, Rick. It really is a different game.
Yeah, I said the day the nomination was made, we'll see how long she lasts, because all of the bad stuff, I do think they're going to want to push through. And I think the tidal wave will be too strong. And I fear that, she didn't last long. Just my thought. So we'll see where it takes us. Lastly, got to get your thoughts. You know, we're coming on up on the big holidays. Christmas is coming. Holiday gift giving. You guys have a guide, don't you?
We sure do. We have every year a holiday gift guide made in America, carefully curated by our team with a lot of suggestions from around the country. This year, which is our 11th year, we have 112 gift ideas from all 50 states in a lot of different categories, ranging from, you know, sleds that are made in Western New York to custom-made stationery in Virginia, to that good old America denim you used to be able to get, that's made by a guy in California with an all-American supply chain, and a gazillion other things that are really great. But people should check it out, and they should share it, and they should buy. And, you know, it's great buying an American-made holiday gift for someone, because you're going to, it's a great story. Yep. And you're gonna be supporting a job, and you're gonna put a smile on the face of whoever's getting it, because it's gonna be totally kind of surprising and feel good.
This is how we unite the country around the idea. The holidays are coming. Unite the country around buying things that were made here in America. Something I don't think, red hat, blue hat, no hat, I don't think anyone disagrees with.
That's right. And people have lots of different reasons why they love Made in America, but they all add up to, you know, I think, you know, good news for our country.
There you go.
And that's like creating awareness that you can make stuff here, and that if you make products people want and they can find it, that they're going to go out and get them.
AmericanManufacturing.org, the home of this holy grail of Made in America. We'll get links out on social media. But Scott, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing your expertise. Thanks so much.
You bet. Rick, thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Scott Paul, president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Want to hear your thoughts. What are your plans for the big holiday? Will you be checking out the Made in America Holy Grail there to find those gifts? Hope so. AmericanManufacturing.org. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1829. That was the day that William Silvis was born in Armagh, Pennsylvania. Growing up, he was one of 12 children. His father was a wagon maker and taught him the trade. At the age of 18, he became an ironworking apprentice. His skills took him to Philadelphia, where he found work. But ironwork was changing. More and more foundries were hiring unskilled labor, or helpers, to assist in production. They could pay these workers significantly less and undercut the wages of the skilled iron molders. In response, William joined his local iron molders union. But he knew if they were to really have any power as workers, they would need to join together with other locals. In 1863, he brought together 21 locals to form the Iron Molders International Union. 3 years later, he embarked on an even more ambitious project, forming a national labor organization for workers across the trades. Under his leadership, the National Labor Union grew to 300,000 members strong. William shared his thoughts on the importance of labor in a speech to the Iron Molders Union in 1864, saying, quote, "If working men and capitalists are equal co-partners, composing one vast firm by which the industry of the world is carried on and controlled, why do they not share equally in the profits? Why does capital take to itself the whole loaf, while labor is left to gather up the crumbs? Why does capital roll in luxury and wealth, while labor is left to eke out a miserable existence in poverty and want?" Sadly, after all these years, William's questions are still being asked today. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So AmericanManufacturing.org, as you know, a big fan of Buy American, a big fan of domestic production for domestic consumption, big fan of creating jobs here, you know, maybe even your own, saving your own job by ensuring that people are buying the products and things that are made here, especially for the holidays. Win-win, good stuff, something I hope we do a lot more of. Day one, you know, we talked a bit about day one, you know, the dictator day. Evidently, we're going to find the day one dictator. We're going to ban transgender troops. Evidently, that's an executive order that's planned for day one. Anyone in the military who's transgendered, gone. It's about 15,000 active member soldiers. And you go, don't we have a lot? Like, you know, million plus? 15,000 doesn't sound like a lot of, and they made such a big deal out of it. In fact, I heard Somebody explained to me that, you know, the transgenders, they go into the military, so the military will pay for it, and then they get to be, like the other side, and then they don't have to do anything, and there's this real belief that this is a thing, and it's not. Also day one, Trump's preparing the big energy plan. They're going to drill, baby, drill. But the part that I find most interesting is they're going to roll this in, you know, with approvals that they're going to give export permits for the new liquefied gas products that are being produced and the increased drilling off the U.S. coast and on federal lands. So what we're doing now, remember, again, this is the drill, baby, drill. Make gas a buck a gallon. They're going to drill all of the resources here, and then they're going to ship it out into the international community. Why, you say? Why would they do that, Rick? So the oil companies can make more money. That's why. Prices aren't coming down. Oil companies like it just where it is. And I find it interesting that we're going to drill, baby, drill here and then ship it away. Look, I said from the beginning, you wanted the Keystone XL pipeline? Fine, I'm okay with it. Put a refinery in Chicago, pump it to Chicago, and then all of that oil stays right here. That can't go into the international market, stays here. Lowers our energy prices. If you're going to destroy the planet, if you're going to destroy the country, if you're going to, you know, do all of this horrible stuff, at least at the minimum, we should get buck a gallon gasoline. But it's not going to happen because the profiteers don't want it. Also, get ready for the big bill that will be next year. There'll be one giant piece of legislation, and it'll be all encompassing. And remember how the Republicans were against, you know, the Build Back Better, how they were against the Inflation Reduction Act, how they were against the American Rescue Plan, you know, how they were against all of that stuff. Because, well, you know, we should do these bills individually. Oh, no, that's not going to happen. Everything on their wet dream list will be in this one big bill. You know, border security, energy policy, spending cuts, you know, gutting grannies, LIHEAP money. All of it, tax cuts, all of it, every campaign promise into one giant bill so that it's easy to manage and muster through and get through. Because, look, they're going to get this little honeymoon. They're going to get this little, okay, well, we can't react too crazy. We can't. They're going to like a hot knife through butter. They are going to drive this car into the ditch. And they know they don't have a lot of time. They're going to get about a year to get stuff done. Second year will be defending what they did in the first and then losing the coming elections. They're already planning for this. And then they're planning for, and this, I'm telling you to write this down, because they're going to get everything they wanted, everything on their wet dream list. It's going to harm the economy. They're going to lose in the midterms. Democrats are going to take over in the midterms, at least the House, maybe the Senate back. And things are going to get worse in the second half of that. And since Trump can't run, they're going to blame everything on Trump. The Republicans go, well, Democrats controlled the House and the Senate. They didn't do anything. You should put us back in. You know, the people who destroyed things. Because, you know, we've kind of not learned that lesson time and time again. And I wonder if we ever will. But understand that one big bill, that's going to have every one of their priorities in it. This is going to be... To hearken from the past, this is going to be the pork barrel bill. This is going to be where everyone gets their piece. Everyone gets their little bit. Everyone gets their taste. So for me, it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays itself out. Want to hear your thoughts, though? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. How do you think the transition's going? Are you interested in how the ideology just doesn't seem to all pair up? And what could that look like? And maybe we should put it on TV, make it a reality TV show. Yeah. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. As always, miss any of the program, freespeech.org. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We will see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until
this is 97.9 WGBW Denmark, Green Bay's real news and great conversation, a civic media radio station.
ABC News.